हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्थु सहवीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्णचैतन्यप्रभुनित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैतगदाधर शिवसरिगौरभक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे. Okay, so now continuing with Draupadi's chapter 10, Draupadi's Swayamvar. So the Pandavas now have attained Domya as their guru, as their guide, by the direction of Angaraparna. And so now they've started on their journey from Eka Chakra towards Kampilya. So Eka Chakra is already is all the way in the west in Bengal, and Kampilya is in the east in Bengal, and it's all the way in the west. So it's in that area kind of below Delhi, and that area over there to the west. It's quite a big kingdom. After a few days' journey, the forest pass brought the Pandavas and Domya onto the road leading to Panchala. They made their way along the broad stone highway. As they did, they met a group of Brahmanas. The Brahmins asked, "Who are you and where are you going?" Yudhishthira replied that they were five Brahmacharis, celibate students who had come from Eka Chakra along with their teacher. The Brahmins then exhorted the brothers to attend Draupadi Swayamvar. "Accompany us. We are going straight there. The magnanimous King Drupad will be distributing vast wealth to the Brahmins on his divine daughter's behalf." Right, so as they're going, they meet another group of Brahmins, and so Brahmins like to hang out with Brahmins, especially the Pandavas, and you know how they'll look, because they'll look very, very nice. And they have that purity. They have that celestial look to them. So because Brahmins are attracted by that purity, by that tejas that's there, and so they'll take that show that they're brahmacharis, so then they'll naturally take it as because of brahmacharya, when yes, they are brahmacharis, so they'll have that aspect to it, but it's mainly because they're devotees, and such special devotees, and they also have that element of being from the celestials, so then they'll be very attractive, so the other Brahmas would be very inspired to go with them. But at the same time, other Brahmins tend to be broad-minded, so they try to be accommodating and deal with everybody. So they're saying that they're going straight there, means that they're not just going that direction and stopping here and there, and so it'll take them forever. Their point is they're also going as quickly as possible to make it for the festival. So then if you accompany them, then all together, then like they can sit, they can talk, they can, they'll walk, and then they'll discuss things in the evening. They can sit and discuss about spiritual things. And so it'll be a nice program for them. Again, the Pandavas heard of the extraordinary birth and beauty of Draupadi, as well as details of her impending Swayamvar. All of Kampilya would be celebrating. There would be actors, singers, dancers, and expert reciters of ancient Vedic histories. Powerful wrestlers would compete, and athletes would give wonderful displays. Food and drink of the best quality would be served in abundance. At the end of the celebration, Draupadi would then select a husband from amongst the kings and princes who had been assembling from all parts of the world. The Brahmins told the Pandavas that they had heard that Drupad had set a most difficult task for the man who would win his daughter's hand. The kings who were coming to compete would also be distributing much charity to the Brahmins in hopes of invoking auspiciousness for themselves and attaining victory at the Swayamvar. So you see, Draupadi is doing very nice festival, entertaining everyone with all these nice things, actors, singers, dancers, and that, so there'll be that side. Plus, there'll all be all the sports side, the sports and athletics and, the wrestling and all these things. So all this is being done by his arrangement. So all these people are being taken care of. So he's doing all this, and that means all these persons taking part in it, meaning the performers, the entertainers, they'll all be taken care of, so then it's very nice for them. They all want to be there, and they want to do their best. And at the same time, he's giving in charity, and these other kings and that are giving in charity. So the kings that are going are giving in charity so that they'll have, they're trying to invoke in auspiciousness that they'll be successful in winning Draupadi's hand. And Draupad, he is giving all this in charity. So, and making all these wonderful arrangements, one, to, you know, just to please the kings, the Brahmins, the general populace, but all the benefit of that will go to his daughter. So in this thing, he's not doing something for himself or like this. This is specifically for the daughter. She'll get the benefit from that. And so by that piety, then her family life will go very nicely. So then, you know, it has a more greater aspect. He's performing it for his daughter. The kings are performing for themselves. But in any case, it's a good thing. They're giving in charity. The Brahmins laughed as they spoke. They pointed to the simple cloth the Pandavas were wearing. It seems you boys could use some new cloth. Follow us. Having received all that you require, you may return with us or go wherever you will. Inviting the five brothers to travel with them, the Brahmins continued, who knows, the princess may even select one of you boys, all as handsome as the celestials. They pointed at Bhima. This godlike youth has a body like a thunderbolt. Surely he will win much wealth if he enters the wrestling competitions. So they're pointing out is that you're going there, you know, we're going there, you're going to go to see, that's nice, but you could also, by going there, get some new cloth on that, because everyone's giving in charity, so there'll be a nice time, nice food, there'll be charity, you'll get some nice clothes, and, you know, who knows, maybe she'll even pick one of you, because they're attractive as the celestials, so they're not just regular, ordinary, you know, general people, or even just general Kshatriyas, they're outstanding on themselves. And they're pointing at it, laughing and pointing Bhima. He's so big and like that, he looks so strong. If he entered the wrestling competitions, he'd even get more, you know, charity and things like that. So they're just pointing out that it's, you know, everything will be very nice, so come with us and it'll be a good time. Yudhishthira smiled. We shall all accompany you to Kampilya. Pray, lead the way, right? Because they don't know, and so they're not going to show that they know. And that's so they're going to say, you know, because they say we're going straight there, so they must know or know how to inquire from people to get there, because maybe they're regularly traveling like this. And so then they say, you lead the way, we'll follow. And that way, no one's going to notice, you know, that there's a bunch of Brahmins and here they're amongst them. If they're leading in the front, someone might notice, but they're in the back, so. In this way, it's very cultured. He's letting the Brahmins, because as Kshatriyas, they should let the Brahmins lead anyway. And, you know, like this. Does that make sense? So that's the whole point, is because the Brahmins going in the front means then you're following Shastra. That's the significance. The Brahmin walks in the front, you're following the directions of Scripture. That's the whole idea. Rather than, no, I'm in charge, so I should be in the front. No, it's a matter of, I'm in charge, but I'm in charge according to Scriptures, on the authority of Scriptures, so I follow that. The party proceeded. They traveled by day and at night stopped in roadside woods or in lake shores, because when you're out in the road, there's no lights, and so then what's the point of traveling at night? So in the morning early, you're getting up at the Brahma Muhurta, doing all your sadhana, so as soon as the sun is up and all that, then you can start walking. And so then you'll travel until, you know, the twilight in the evening, so you'll find a place, you'll take your bath and all that, and then you'll spend the night, and then they can discuss things. With their gentle speech and amiable behavior, the Pandavas endeared themselves to whomever they met, but no one recognized them. Right? So by Krishna's grace, no one sees them. You know, they're also not acting as Kshatriyas, they're just acting as, they're devotees, so devotees are naturally have the brahminical qualities. So the point is as Kshatriyas, they have the brahminical qualities or the devotional qualities, but they apply them into Kshatriya Dharma. But since they're living a life of Brahmins, they'll follow the brahminical Dharma. So that devotional nature, the 26 qualities that they naturally have, then will just match and people will just think that they're wonderful Brahmins. As they reached the outskirts of the city, they came to a small village. Walking from house to house to find accommodations, they were soon admitted by a potter and his family. Right, because they'll go house to house because everybody's coming, all the Brahmins and that. So many houses either don't have facility or there's already guests staying there or other, you know, just something's already going. So they go house to house until they find one. And so they said very quickly, then they were admitted by a potter and his family. You know, so they had something. The brothers settled there and lived by begging, just as they had done in Ekachakra. So they're staying with a guest, but because they're begging, they put no pressure on the family. So they just sleep on the veranda. It's always some place they can take bath. You know, it doesn't, you know, they have a well or there's a pond or there's a river or something there, so like that. And so then it's just a matter of you have a place to stay, keep your things, you can sleep there. And so then there's no problem, and they beg in the way they maintain themselves. So the persons are giving them facility, but at the same time there's no pressure, especially if they're not, you know, here is a potter and his family, so they're not going to be very wealthy. They learned from the villagers that the Swayamvara was to take place in a few days. The king has set a stiff test for winning Draupadi. A small target had been placed on top of a tall pole. Beneath it was a rotating plate with one small hole in it. An arrow had to be shot through that hole. At the moment, it was aligned with the target, right? So you have the tall pole, you have the target, and you have this plate that has a hole in it that spins around. And so when that hole aligns with the target, then at that time you have to be able to shoot. So you're going to see it now, but the point is it's going to take time for the arrow to get there. That means you have to calculate when it comes and then shoot as it's coming. So that's the point. Only someone like Arjuna can accomplish this fact. The king had also determined that a particular bow should be used, one which an ordinary man could barely lift, you know, let alone string. So if they can barely lift it, it doesn't mean that it's made out of lead, so it's not actually a strong bow. When you bend it, it just, you know, it's got like, you know, 2 pound you know, weight. It means that it's so heavy because it's so strong. So these bows, means we're used to, you know, the regular, they're straight bows, and then you take them a curve, or we have the recurved where they're slightly curved back at both ends, you know, and so then when you pull them back, it goes straight like this. But these bows, when they start, they're like this. And so you have to pull them out this way. Does that make sense? So they'll go back all the way like that. So how powerful is that? Plus, it's so heavy you can hardly lift it. So that means it's a super powerful bow. So that's why people like, the uniqueness of people like Arjuna, you know, and Karna, and these other, Drona, and these, that they can use bows like that. So that's the specialty. Only an extraordinary warrior would be able to pass the test and win the divine Draupadi's hand. So that was Drupad's idea from the beginning. For the Dakshin to Drona, when the his students went and to Kampila to defeat defeat Drupad, then the Kauravas weren't successful at all. So Drupad would not be impressed by them at all. But Arjuna went out with his brothers, and then he defeated him, caught him, and brought him. So one, he did it with prowess, he did it with the proper culture, with the Kshatriya spirit, so he wasn't rough and all that with it. You know, he was firm, so he got him, he caught him, he brought him, like this. But he didn't in any way insult him or deal with him improperly as one would, like you see the Kauravas are just going out and being crazy. So he was impressed, Drupad, and he was thinking, I would like this boy as a son-in-law. So when his daughter was born, he thought, she'll marry Arjuna. So that means he made this test. So his idea, only Arjuna could pass the test. Others would not be able to do it. Arjuna was enlivened. He prayed to Krishna that he might have the chance to try for the princess, right? Because otherwise the king are only going to be competing. So how would he as a Brahmin get a chance? So there must be some way. Because otherwise, if he just strides up, they'll say this is not for Brahmins. So there must be some arrangement that that everyone has tried and failed, and so therefore, now what happens at the Swayamvara? Because she, you know, that means, since that's set, that means she can't marry anybody that's tried. So is there anybody else? You know. So then, if a great Brahmin comes forward, and one of the demigods comes forward, because the demigods are watching. So if one of the demigods comes down and takes part, and like. It's not a problem. Your daughter married to one of the demigods. It's not bad. You know, socially no one's going to complain. You know, or a very powerful Brahmin or someone like that. Because the point is it's not just that they're a nice Brahmin. They can lift the bow, they can string the bow. Because lifting the bow, then you have to string it. And then stringing the bow, you have to be able to pull it. Pulling the bow, you have to be able to, you know, aim it and actually shoot it. And shooting the bow, you have to be able to have that time expert timing to get the rotation. So you see, it's only someone as qualified as Arjuna could do this. So he's praying to Krishna that there would be some opportunity, because otherwise it normally wouldn't come up, because Swayamvars are just for the Kshatriyas. The Brahmins don't take part. From Vyasadeva's words, it seems she was destined to be the wife of one of them, because he had mentioned about go there, or as a young, you know, and then take part. And by such a union, the brothers would gain the friendship and alliance of the powerful Drupad, because he's a huge, it's a really big kingdom, his kingdom, and he's very powerful. You saw he defeated the Kauravas. You know, Karna is there. This is the one thing that we'll note throughout the book. Karna every time says, well, let's just fight with them head on. Why we're like, but every time there is an opportunity for fight, Karna's defeated every time, but he never remembers that. You know, he was defeated there. All, you know, 100 brothers plus Karna, and they got defeated. Arjuna himself, because Bhima's just taking care of the elephants. You know, so it's Arjuna himself with Nakula and Sahadev protecting his wheels, you know, the sides, and then him. So basically, he alone defeated him, while all the Kauravas with Karna could not. And this will come up again and again. But, you know, that's false ego. You just can't see. You're blinded. That's why it's called avidya, or ignorance. That would, then to have that friendship alliance of powerful Drupad, that would probably prove useful in the future, right? Because right now they don't have any position. Arjuna eagerly awaited the Swayamvar. Drupad had made lavish preparations for the ceremony. A huge stadium had been constructed. In its massive sandstone walls were 100 gates, because that side of India, sandstone is very easily available. Each one inlaid with gold and precious gems. So it's like they make these stone gates, and then in the gates they're putting gems and all those nice decorations. And there's so much of it, and there's so much wealth in the kingdom, and people are so satisfied. People aren't walking in and prying them out of the walls and taking them home. It's just, it's decoration. You leave it there. Right? Each gate was wide enough to admit crowds passing through. So that has to be, they're very wide, because if they're narrow, people get, and they get blocked, but if it's really wide, then a crowd can move through. They little adjustment they can get through. Within the stadium were gently sloping terraces made of coral and lapis lazuli. So you had these terraces that were slightly sloping. They're not too sloped. They're a little sloped so you can sit on them comfortably. But at the same, you know, so it's like when you, sometimes when you sit, if you're a little tired, you put something so that your back part is higher than the knees and feet. So that little bit of slope does that. And then at the same time, it means you can see over the person in front of you. So there'll be these terraces that are there, you know, and so that all the people can see. They can just see there, because the terrace will just be flat and it's out in the open. And At the front of these terraces were hundreds of jewel-encrusted thrones arranged for the many monarchs and attendants. So the terraces are there, and then down there'll be all the thrones and all that, where all the kings. So the stadium, the open areas there, immediately around that is the Kshatriyas and their people. Then above that will be the terraces where then everybody else who's not taking part is sitting. At the front, all around the stadium, the king had built white mansions for the residents. So the kings had all these mansions around. Everybody else, you stay wherever you can. The buildings were many storied and looked like the cloud-kissing peaks of Mount Kailash. So they're very big, they're very nice and all that, because when you have, generally speaking, is 7 stories the standard, because you can walk up the stairs of that. But now in Vastu, you have the aspect of that each floor as you build it, it's 1/12 less than the one before it. Right? So let's say the first one is 12 feet, so the next one up is 1/12, so 1/12 is a foot, it'll be 11 feet. Right? And then you take 1/12 of that and the next one, so it gets smaller and smaller as you go. So you want to have a good high ceiling on the top floor, so that means the bottom floor will have very high ceilings. So even though you say it's a 7-story building, it's actually very high. It's higher than a regular, like that. The windows of those mansions were covered with gold lattices, and the walls studded with diamonds and emeralds, because they'll give, you know, they'll reflect the light, they'll give beauty and everything. And gold lattices are there so that that in the windows, then one is you don't have to worry about anyone falling out, and two is that it gives you some privacy. When there's jolly or these lattices there, then if someone looks, their eye will catch whatever's in front. Then if you want to see inside, you have to refocus your eyes to look inside. So then you know I'm looking inside. It's not just the window's there and you happen to look. It's that you look, you see the so. And if it's darker inside, then you naturally can't really see with the lattice. You'll just see the lattice. That means people from inside the house can look out the lattice and see outside very nicely because it's bright, but not be seen from inside. So it gives that privacy. So that's the whole idea of the lattice work. So it's not just that it's protective in the sense that. It's a matter of it also has that element of just giving that bit of privacy. Costly rugs were spread on their marble floors. So he did these. It's all marble and all that, and nice rugs are down, and then the rugs can be moved around. You can sit, you can clean nicely. They'll have their assistants with them. They'll take care. So it's very, very, very nice arrangements he's made. When the day of the Swayamvar arrived, the kings were invited into the stadium. They came through the northern gate and took their seats on the golden thrones. As the monarchs entered, thousands of trumpets blared and kettle drums resounded throughout the stadium, right? So here you see kettle drums, you know, the boom, 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 like this, and the trumpets and all that. Many rishis, all of them shining like the sun, entered through the eastern gate, right? So everybody's got their gates that they come through. The terraces, adorned with countless wreaths and garlands, were filled with punchless citizens, right? So all the citizens came there. As they flooded into the stadium, the colorfully dressed people made a sound like the roar of the ocean. Right, because they're all excited, they're all talking and everything as they come. So everybody coming in at once, because you had 100 gates, and each gate's wide enough for a crowd. So it's going to make a big sound as they all come in and then go and take their place on the terraces, like that. And the scent of black aloe and frankincense wafted throughout the stadium as everyone settled into their places. So then the black aloe, no, this will be the aguru, you know, because the trees and all that. So black means that it has that special fungus in it that gives it that smell. I don't know if you remember, maybe about maybe a little bit more. There was a few years back that behind the temple on the western side, one of the bottle palms, it was going bad, but it smelled like aguru. So this certain fungus gets inside, and it, by being in the tree, then it gives the smell to the agar. It's not just the tree, it's that the tree, the agar tree, that fungus is able to sit on it. And when it sits on it, then it changes the fragrance of it, and it gives it that smell. So when it says black aloe, that means it has a lot of that, so it's a very strong flavor. And so that will be able to, you know, nicely scent. Now, if you want to buy aguru chips, it's really expensive. I think I'm not sure what it is, but it's some ridiculous, like, you know, thousands and thousands of for a kilo. It's not cheap at all. So here he's scenting the whole stadium with this, that and frankincense. So you can see how much opulence was there and how much is being shown. And then the people are coming. So you have this wonderful arrangement, how it is. All the people are dressed nicely in all their colorful best arrangements. So all the color, all the sound, all the fragrance and everything, all the gold. So very attractive, very attractive. The Pandavas entered with the Brahmanas and took their place in their midst, unnoticed by anyone. They looked around the arena. At the head of all the assembled kings sat Duryodhana and his brothers, resembling a blazing planet surrounded by 100 stars, right? Because they're going to, as the emperor at the time, so naturally they get a special place. And then, like that, all the kings, according to their position, are going to get. So that's one of the things in understanding Purana or history. History means up to today. So normally, a lot of times, you take that history as the old thing. It includes today, and it also includes the future. So you have to know, what are the lines? Who's there? What are the special lines? And who has that kind of prestige? Who in that has done greater sacrifice or shown greater chivalry or something like that, and you have to be able to judge, and so then where everybody sits and all that. That's why it's a special thing. Well, you know. Bhima felt his anger rising, but Yudhishthira checked him with a glance. They could not risk being discovered yet. So at this point, they can't because they have no allies. Duryodhana is there with all his brothers. He'll have Karna there. He'll have everybody there. If something breaks out, who knows of all those kings, how many are allied with them or anything, because they have no alliance. So then now is not the time. So Bhima has to. So he just gives a look, and then, you know. The ceremony had begun. Actors and dancers were entertaining the crowd. Brahmins were performing fire sacrifices. Drupad was distributing charity. All of this continued for 15 days, and each day the attendance swelled. So it got more and more every day. The Pandavas were astonished to see Drupad's affluence. The Panchalakig was distributing heaps of gold and gems to the Brahmins. So it means he's giving so much in charity to the Brahmins that all this, the credit goes to his daughter. So it's, you know, so much. Because if you, whatever you give in charity, that you'll get back in a future time. So by him giving in charity, all that wealth will go to his daughter in the future. You know, she'll get it back by that karma. So he wants to make sure she's nicely taken care of. Although dressed as Brahmins, the Pandavas did not go forward to collect charity, but remained in their places, awaiting the day when Draupadi would appear. So one is they want to stay out of the way so they don't draw any attention, no one sees them. Because if they go forward, everybody in the crowd can see. Because Drupad's there in a prominent place distributing charity, the Brahmins are doing yajnas, there's, you know, performances going on, all these different things are happening. And so if they go forward, everybody can see. So they're just avoiding that. You know. On the 16th day, the princess, dressed in robes of shining yellow silk and adorned with brilliant ornaments, entered the arena. In her hand, she held a golden dish containing the nuptial garland, which she would place around the neck of the man who successfully passed the test her father had set. Gentle music from the flute, tabur, and veena played as Draupadi walked towards a seat next to her father. Right, so you see the kings as kettle drums and trumpets. But for Draupadi, then it's, you know, veena, flute, tabur, like this. It's very pleasant and that as she comes in. Seeing her beauty, the kings and princes suddenly stood up and brandished their weapons. Right, so it wasn't like normally they come in, the girl comes in, and okay, like this, and they go. She's so beautiful and so qualified that as soon as she comes up, they just spontaneously just all stand up. And not just stand up to look, they brandish their weapons, you know, because they're kshatriyas, they're showing their power, that yes, you know, like that. So it's a very strong response. And it's not just a few of them, there's thousands like that. They boasted to one another in loud voices, right? So it's not just, I hope I win. Like, now they're telling, yeah, you know. I shall win this princess. None can equal my strength and prowess. Draupadi will be mine. So each one is saying this, and they're all looking at each other, right? That host of princes seemed like an agitated ocean as they rose and boasted of their power. They slapped their arms and held aloft their bows and swords, looking like so many Himalayan elephants maddened by desire while in rut. Right, so they're just going completely bonkers, these guys. The celestial chariots of the gods, led by the guardians of the four quarters of the universe, Yamaraj, Indra, Kuvera, and Vayu, settled above the arena. Right, so the four corners. So Yamaraj is in the south, Indra the east, Kuvera the north, and Vayu. They have Vayu. He's also southeast. Generally, it would be also be Varuna is generally there, but it looks like he maybe didn't come. So, yeah, they're sitting above the arena, then in their chariots, just floating in the sky. Siddhas, Charnas, Nagas, Rudras, Daityas, and Danavas, and Guyakas assembled in the canopy of the sky. Right, so they're all around like this, and then up in the top, you know, it will be all these others. Curious to witness Draupadi's sacrifice and the selection of Draupadi's husband, right? Because she's, you know, everybody knows about how difficult this is, and it's so special in her beauty, and she's born from the fire. So who in the universe is born from fire? So even for the demigods, that's something special. The great rishis, headed by Narada, Angira, and Parvati, stood in the sky among the gods, appearing like so many suns. So they're there in their chariots, and they're just standing there. When the five Pandava brothers saw Draupadi's dark and lovely face, they felt their hearts pierced as if by darts. They stood up from their seats and gazed at her exquisite form as she moved gracefully to her father's side. Right, because everybody's sitting in the terraces, they're all sitting, right, because they're not seats, it's just terraces means flat. It's slightly sloped, but it's flat. And so when they sat, like the Kshatriyas, they stood up. All the other Brahmins are just sitting there. On the opposite side of the arena were the Yadavas from Mathura. Sitting in their midst, Krishna noticed the Pandava stand. He looked closely at the five brothers and, turning to Balaram, said, "In my opinion, those five men over there are the Pandavas." Krishna indicated the brothers with a slight nod of his head, because he's not going to make a scene, because otherwise others might look and what are they looking at? So he just kind of, so he'll also look at that. "I heard a rumor that my cousin survived in the fire at Varnavata." So he mentioned immediately not just the Pandavas, but my cousins, right? Because that's a pastime, as he's there to interact with the pure devotees. So then they're his cousins. "Now this seems true. What is your opinion, Rama?" Right? So he's saying this is my opinion, but now he's asking his elder brother, "What do you think?" Because then if the elder brother says, no, this, that, and so many things, then okay. But, Balaram carefully observed each of the five brothers. There was no doubt. They were Kunti's sons. He turned and smiled at Krishna, who returned the smile, but they remained silent about their discovery. Right? So they're sitting in a place that the Pandavas, the Yadavas, Krishna and Balaram noticed them on the opposite sides, but not Duryodhana and all that. They must be sitting at different, because they'll all be looking at Draupadi. Right? So, all the kings are looking at Draupadi, so no one's going to notice the Pandavas standing up. But Krishna and Balaram aren't interested in Draupadi. Right? She's just an expansion of their internal potency. So then they're noticing the Pandavas. So that's the specialty there. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Shri Prabhupada ki.